Barrett Salee. He, of course, with CBSSports.com. Also, he's a co-host on ESPNU on SiriusXM Radio. Barrett, a happy Thursday to you, and welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Johnny.
You know, right before we went on today, we get news from Auburn that Alan Green is going to become the new Auburn University Director of Athletics. And I'm looking at the release, you know, before taking on this position with Auburn, he was Director of Athletics at the University at Buffalo. I see he's a Notre Dame grad. I'm scratching my head a little bit, you know. How do you feel like this is going to work out?
I don't know. You know, to be honest with you, I'd never heard the name before.
Right, that's me too.
Yeah, I mean, I had never heard his name before until I guess a couple days ago. His name was sort of surfacing around and murmuring around. So apparently, he's done a good job at Buffalo and is a good fundraiser and did a good job. I think when he was at Ole Miss. So you know, I don't know how it's going to work out. I'd be lying if I said one way or the other. But like I've told you before many times, a lot of people can do the AD job. you know, you just have to make the right decisions in terms of hiring and firing when the time is appropriate. If you do that and you fundraise, you'll be fine. Apparently, he's a good fundraiser. What he makes in terms of decisions when it's time to hire and fire people is yet to be seen. So I don't know. You know, again, it's an AD job. It's not anything what it was 20 years ago. I think the importance of it has changed quite a bit.
All right, so yesterday things started heating up a little bit in Tuscaloosa where Nick Saban was entertaining the idea of possibly naming Hugh Freeze as the offensive coordinator. Another name that was out there too, Jim McElwain, who was the offensive coordinator back during that run for the national title in 2009, later head coach at Colorado State and University of Florida. But in the end, Mike Locksley is going to be promoted. But your thoughts when you first started hearing the possible marriage of Alabama and Hugh Freeze, what was going through your mind?
Well, that Mike Locksley was going to be the offensive coordinator. You know, I talked to some folks around around the program and around Hugh Freeze, and he definitely is interested in that program, but not necessarily as the offensive coordinator. He's interested in a lot of different roles. And I think that really opened the door for, you know, Mike Locksley to ultimately be the guy, and hasn't officially been announced yet, but it probably will be. But you know, he's a guy who was the co-OC last year. He's a good recruiter, and he understands what the personnel is and where it needs to develop from here. So naming him the offensive coordinator, as long as you can still sort of comprise the staff the way Nick Saban wants to comprise it, is fine, and I still think you can. Because I do think that Hugh Freeze would be open to a position coaching role or even an off-the-field role. So, you know, my first thought when all this started going down Monday night and when I talked to some folks around the situation is that ultimately Mike Locksley is going to be the offensive coordinator and Hugh Freeze is probably going to have some sort of role in some capacity.
I'm always entertained by the whole Alabama coaching staff situation with regards to the offensive side of the ball and the fact that Brian Daboll, last time I saw him, he was getting chewed out pretty good there in the second half in that national title game against Georgia. Of course, he's the new offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills. Is it just me or just seems like there's a lot of dicey relationships there on the offensive side as far as that position is concerned?
Well, I think there is. I think that Nick Saban has his style, and Nick Saban has his ideas, and he vocalizes that to his offensive staff. But when they veer from that, sometimes at maybe inopportune times or undesirable times, he lets them know. And he's afraid to sort of state his case as to how things want to be operated. So dicey relationships, I think, might be a little bit extreme. I just think that Nick Saban's not afraid and not going to shy away from consistently telling people how he wants his program run. And sometimes that means erupting on the sidelines in the heat of the moment because that's the kind of person Nick is, and he's effective in that regard. So, you know, is it a tough place to work? I think Lane Kiffin's sort of discussions on Twitter this year have sort of indicated, yeah, sometimes it is. Does that mean it's a bad place to work? No, because sometimes coaches need that. Lane being a guy that I think is proof of that.
Well, I'm not going to disagree there. Here's somebody that's a head coach of a Division I college football program, still needs some maturing there in South Florida.
Well, I don't think he does. I think he's fine. I think he just handles himself differently. But, you know, I think that's, you know, you need to have, you know, some sort of accountability for your actions. And if you screw up, whether you be a player or a coach or whatever, in the heat of the moment, sometimes you need to be told in the heat of the moment. Like, so it's just like, you know, it's just like when you're training, you know, potty training a child, you have to tell him when to go. When you're training a dog, when he does something wrong, you have to make sure they know at that time what they did and why it was wrong. Otherwise, you're not going to be as effective. So I think that's Nick Saban's coaching school. That's Nick Saban's coaching PhD program. A lot of people have gone through it. And, you know, sometimes on the offensive side of the ball, you hear more than the defensive side of the ball because you have a little bit more autonomy on that side.
You mean like when I was potty training my dog and after she used the restroom inside the house, then she hit the bell to go outside? Is that what you're
– Right. Yeah. Like you got to keep reinforcing it. You got to keep reinforcing it. It's like, you know, when the dog chews up the toy outside when he's not supposed to, you have to say, look, this is what – not yours. This is the babies. Don't eat it. Just reinforcement, consistent reinforcement.
Barrett Salee joining us again. You know, when I worked inside sports, and especially in college athletics, I always talked about the importance of student athletes when they're making their decision on where they want to play their next 3 or 4 years as far as college athletics is concerned. First and foremost, make sure you're happy with the school because there's no guarantee. And for the most part, one of the things that you could probably be guaranteed about, that coach who is recruiting you most likely will not be there at the end of your career for that particular school. Either they get fired or they take a job elsewhere. So first and foremost, make sure you're happy with the school. There's a lot of conversation now since coaches are allowed to transfer, you know, meaning take jobs elsewhere, then how come student athletes don't have that same right? And I'm thinking along the lines of what type of can of worms we're opening up if we allow student athletes to be able to transfer at any time they want without having to sit out. Because think about this, and one of the things is I threw out, because I really feel like it will hurt the student athletes as far as their development, not only as a player but also as a person. Because if a coach is concerned that if they yell too much, then they may run off that individual at the end of the year instead of helping them grow as an athlete on the field and off the field. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's you can't have just free reign and the wild, wild west, because a couple of things. One, let's just use Florida State as an example. If you had free reign, what's to prevent, you know, Florida State's entire roster from following Jimbo Fisher to Texas A&M?
Right.
Like, you can't have that. You know, if you've got 4-year guaranteed contracts, which we do now, and mostly every school, if not all schools, utilize them, and almost every single player on every roster utilizes them, how do you guarantee those contracts then? How do you guarantee those scholarships? So you can't have, you know, this idea of just free reign. That's impossible. Even if you build in, you know, benchmarks like, you know, a certain GPA or a certain, you know, level in which you've accomplished in terms of your academic standing or whatever, like, that's impossible. Like, it's just structurally impossible. So, you know, the idea of having one undergrad transfer year and then having the ability to graduate transfer as a graduate, okay, maybe, but still you have to build in safeguards and you have to build in academic benchmarks or something like that. You know, I'm for exploring options, but not to dodge the question, I'm not going to sit here and marry myself to one side or the other without knowing the specifics, because there are a lot of details that go along with this that really have to be ironed out. So I do think the player should have more freedom, but should we just allow unlimited transfers? No, there's no way you can do that logistically.
Barrett Salee joining us. And the other problem, too, is, you know, when we see situations where a student athlete is doing everything they can, you know, they're trying to play up to the best of their abilities, and then a new coach comes in. And this has happened at major programs, football, basketball, whatever the case may be. And when the new coach comes in, he sits down with individual meetings and say, you know, it's all great and fine dandy. You're here. It's nice that you're doing well in the classroom. Well, the bottom line is you're just not good enough to play for me, and you would be doing yourself a service if you transfer away now because you're not going to play for me.
Well, that happens. That happens a lot, and especially with offensive styles. You know, triple option guy, or you know, comes in and doesn't need the pro style passer, or whatever. And like, look, both parties are better off if there's a divorce in those situations sometimes. So, you know, it's with the way coaches move around now, there definitely needs to be more flexibility. I'd love to know a reasonable solution, because I've been in this business for 18 years now, and I can't come up with one that makes total sense for both parties. And I think there needs to be some sort of fluidity, but it's hard. You have to build in academic benchmarks, maybe allow for a coach's name to be on a national letter of intent, and then have that national letter of intent, or at least that part of it, sort of re-signed every single offseason to sort of allow for assistant coach changes to be made without fear of losing players. I don't know. It's a complicated process.
And I think it's going to get worse, especially when we keep seeing these salaries that are escalating, as far as whether it's a 10-year, $75 million deal for Jimbo Fisher going to Texas A&M. To me, it's even worse when you start looking at some of these high-profile offensive and defensive coordinators, where they're making more the best of the bunch than 80% of the head coaches out there. So when you start thinking about it in those terms, then there's going to be more focus on the student athlete and what rights they do have moving forward.
Well, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, coordinator salaries is the biggest sort of wild card, because those are the ones that also move quicker. You know, Jimbo Fisher's probably going to be at Texas A&M forever. That's a destination job. Same with Nick Saban at Alabama. Like, people freak out over head coaching salaries. But, like, look, if you've got one of the best college head coaching jobs in the country, you deserve to get paid a lot of money. But these coordinator positions, they're coordinators. They're assistants. They're not going to be there forever. They have bigger aspirations. They want that big check with that big desk and that big office. So, you know, yeah, that's more concerning, and I think that actually is more of a sort of kickstarter to sort of move that conversation down the road to allow more player movement, because those are the guys that, you know, talk to on a day-to-day basis all these players. Those are the guys that have specific schemes that fit players, and if they're still going to be as fluid from a coaching perspective but make a ton more money, that's a problem.
Barrett Salee joining us once again. He covers college football for CBSSports.com. Plus, he's a co-host on SiriusXM Radio at ESPNU on SiriusXM Radio. Barrett, as far as the college football playoffs are concerned, you know, 4 years in, we've had three different national champions in the 4 years, you know, with Alabama twice, then Clemson, along with Ohio State. Where are we in your eyes as far as the playoffs? Should there be tweaks, adjustments, or did the way things play out this year were good? Because I go back to conference championship weekend, there was still, you know, seven teams out there battling it out that could have played themselves in as far as the big picture as far as the college football national title is concerned.
I'm fine with it the way it is. There are years like this one where it's a little bit messy in terms of how teams get in and which teams deserve to get in. But the beauty of the college football playoff is that it allows for the top-tier teams to get in without the opportunity for teams that don't deserve it to get hot and win a championship that they didn't earn throughout the course of the regular season. So because of the landscape of college football in terms of conferences right now, you almost have to keep it at four, because having fewer spots than there are major conferences is actually an advantage for the sport and an attribute to the playoff, because then you have subjectivity mattering an awful lot, and it does in college football because the landscape changes every single year of the sport, and what defines a championship-worthy team changes every single year based on the landscape of the sport. So if you expand beyond four, you're going to have automatic bids for conference champions, no matter how it's structured. And that is not what college football needs, because then you could have, like in 2012, a 7-5 Wisconsin pulling an upset in the Big Ten championship game. They would be in the playoff. You'd have a 3-loss Florida State team at that very same year in the college football playoff and having the same shot as Notre Dame and Alabama did. That's not what college football needs. So it's fine the way it is. It's subjective, and that's a feature. That's not a criticism.
One of the other important things, of course, to protect the integrity of the bowl games. How do you feel like right now the bowls are, you know, especially the ones outside those bowl games that are determining the national champion?
They're fine. I mean, they're TV shows. That's all they are. They're rewards for players. They get a lot of stuff on those trips that they are not usually able to get. They get swag. They get experiences. They get per diem money, travel money. That is maybe a little bit exorbitant in terms of how much you really need to get from point A to point B and then back to point A. But, they're TV shows, so they're fine. If people don't want to watch them on a random Tuesday night in December, that's fine. Don't watch. But a lot of people do. Attendance is not a non-factor because those games can be played in sound stages for all I care. Doesn't really matter. They're TV shows. They do very, very well. That's why ESPN's in the business of owning a lot of them.
Very much so. You're right.
They're fine. They're not meant to be anything other than rewards for amateur athletes and television shows for fans to, fill some time and have some fun. And they are fun.
We're 20 days away from National Signing Day coming up on Wednesday, February 7th. Of course, we had the early signing period, a lot of interest there, and we're more than halfway through, not quite three-fourths of the way through as far as this year's recruiting season is concerned. Do you like the way this has played out? Do you think there's going to be some more adjustments after this year?
I think it can't be this year. I think it has to be another year of this. But I do think there'll be changes, whether that be moving this up or the early signing day up till August or just doing away with it completely. Because you haven't created an early signing day. You've created an accelerated signing day. You've just accelerated the process. And that's not why this exists. This exists to give those legacy kids who have been around programs forever the opportunity to sign early and get it out of the way. But by having it 2 months ahead of the normal signing day, you've just created madness and stepped your foot on the gas. So I think that we need to move it up to August. And if that's not going to be agreeable, do away with it completely, because it serves no purpose other than honestly programming. And that might be what makes it stick around, because there's a lot of people that tuned in during that early signing day, last month, and TV drives the bus. So if a lot of people are going to tune in, then the sport's probably going to keep it. But I think it should be done away with and moved to August. And I don't know which one works best, but I would say if I had it my way, do away with it completely and just move it back to the first Wednesday in February and be done with it.
I guess it depends on who you ask. If you ask a fan of a team that, say, was not bowl eligible, did not have any distractions, they probably liked it, especially if they had a good signing period early. For those that were in the transition of hiring a coach, getting their coach late, and then having to deal with recruiting, maybe not so much. Time will tell how this all plays out. Hey, do me a favor before we let you go. Let the listeners know again how they can keep up with all your coverage.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook at Barrett Salee, BarrettSallee, or subscribe to the SEC Smothered and Covered podcast on iTunes and the College Football Hangover podcast on iTunes.
Well, Barrett, as always, we appreciate you, buddy. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll look forward to talking to you again down the road.
All right, thanks for having me.
Thank you.